Hello and welcome to Ladies of Gumption. This is episode 182, Witness Protection. We are the Ladies of Gumption. We recap DC TV in a flash. My name is Jessica and I am here with
Tatiana. And Tatiana.
Both of us.
You can catch us on Twitter at DC TV Gumption. Follow us along as we live tweet shows during the week. You can find all of our podcasts on our Podomatic site, www.podomatic.com/DCTVGumption. You can also find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and if you are fancy, on Patreon, which is where you, for $10 a month, you get our episodes 24 hours in advance, plus extra bonus episodes where we discuss premium shows, so on HBO Max or on Disney Plus. Recently we did Encanto, and last week we did The Batman, which was an excellent discussion, if I do say so myself. And coming up right after this, we're going to be doing Turning Red. So if you, any of that is of interest to you, you can find our Patreon at www.patreon.com/DCTVGumption. In the news, Misha Collins from Supernatural fame has been cast as Harvey Dent in the Gotham Knights pilot that they're doing for the CW. I had that little emoji with the lopsided as my reaction. But what did you ladies think of this news?
I feel like it guarantees a longevity for this Gotham Knights show because the Supernatural fandom is strong, but I do not feel like it makes me care.
I like Misha Collins. I think he's a good actor. I watched him on Supernatural for like several seasons, but I feel like when I saw that casting, all I could feel was bitterness because Batwoman has still not been renewed for season 4.
I think that's where my is coming in, because I don't know if, like, you know, since Batwoman hasn't been renewed yet, I don't know if they're waiting to see what this Gotham Knights pilot looks like before they say yes or no on Batwoman. And if so, I think that's pretty shitty if they're trying to replace Gotham Knights with Batwoman. And it would make me side-eye Natalie Abrams once again, like she got off my shit list. But then, since he's also so heavily involved in Gotham Knights, I don't know. It's her and this other person that's from Batwoman that are also on the show. And, you know, when you read, like, the concept of Gotham Knights, it's not necessarily in the same, I feel like it can't be necessarily in the same universe. And then, you know, how networks are, like, oh, we can't have two of the same thing at the same time, even though you have Supergirl and Superman and Lois, but, you know, they're not both in the same city, I guess. But I don't know. If they're trying to...
It's weird, because I feel like the Arrowverse is connected, yes, but it's so very loosely connected at this point. It's like they're not even in the same universe sometimes.
Yeah,
you know?
Because Stargirl and Naomi aren't in the Arrowverse universe. Mm-hmm. So it could be on a separate, I mean, but we don't really know. So I'm just like forecasting my business out so I can be like pre-salted for whatever happens.
Pre-salted. I like it.
I'm definitely of that opinion though, like that if it's interfering with that woman kind of thing, then it just definitely does not make me excited for Gotham Knights. And I also don't really know how many new people, like how many new eyeballs it's going to attract, because it's still not a traditional Batman show. It's still a Batman show without Batman. So right. I feel like people would still be like, I don't know about that, if their issue is that they're not getting enough eyeballs on Batwoman.
Did y'all talk about the three castings that they already made a couple weeks ago before?
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, we're the cast is filling out. So I guess they're doing the pilot. It also just seems like really, I mean, how long before they actually start shooting the pilot? And it's just like, you know, if they're waiting for that to say yes or no on Batwoman, it just seems like, you know, I don't know.
I feel like they would, I mean, I don't know how COVID changed things, but before this would be pilot season, right? So like, they would be, they're announcing all this cast stuff because they're probably about to shoot it like this week or next week or something
right.
like that. So we should hear fairly soon. And I'm sure like the CW sale has something to do with it too, because the stuff that they renewed for the most part, except I think maybe Nancy Drew and Superman and Lois, already have deals, the deals on Netflix still existing. I hope that's not the case, but I really don't know. It's like for the first time in CW history that I don't know where they're going to go.
Right.
Speaking of renewals, what we do have, like what May alluded to and what we do know so far, is that Grant got his wish and he is getting The Flash season 9. Superman and Lois, those are the two Arrowverse shows that we know are coming back. Stargirl is already coming back for season 3, so the next for it would be season 4. And then also outside of the Arrowverse, it's like Nancy Drew, Walker, I think Riverdale?
Riverdale, unfortunately, yes.
Which, yep. Like, now, apparently, they have superpowers, and it's like, what the fuck,
which is,
man?
Apparently a thing in the comics, which I did not realize, but still, like, within the show itself, it's really bizarre.
Yeah, in comics, they always just throw random storylines in there. Those storylines last, like, 3 episodes, and you just move on to another universe or whatever. So, like, that's not even... acceptable. Also, I'm still like, I haven't even watched in a billion years, but I'm still like, why are Betty and Archie together now? I'm not behind that. So that's all, that's my thought on that.
Well, that's all our thoughts on the news, because I think those are the only two basic things that came out this week. Coming up, we are going to go into the body of our show, which is Naomi and the Flash this week. We'll talk about what sparked joy, did not spark joy, feedback, and give a lady assumption of the week. Taking it away is Tati for side A, Rules of Engagement.
Ho-ho! And that is Naomi. The episode was called The Fellowship of the Disc. Jacob and Naomi team up to find an extraterrestrial threat while Jennifer and Greg contemplate moving. Zimbardo and Dee are forced to settle their differences while Anthony, Nathan, and Lourdes get to know each other better. And a longer explanation of this episode is, while Naomi struggles with her powers, she also struggles to return to normalcy with her parents. She convinces them not to cancel their anniversary party on her behalf, but then overhears them planning to move. Dun dun dun! To make matters worse, someone breaks in and steals her special disc. She doesn't want to tell any of the adults, but she does end up having to tell Jacob, who eagerly helps her in her supposed alien hunting quest. They search Star Labs together, where Naomi is forced to reveal her powers to him while saving him. And then when they follow Jacob's alien finding contraption thingy to a storage unit, they learn that her parents have, like, all these, like, go bags ready. Like, they have just, like, supplies ready to run away whenever Naomi needs it. And that makes her feel really insecure about their situation and the burden that she's placed on them on their all their lives. At the party that night, she and Annabelle also make up from their previous fight when Annabelle realizes that Jacob and Naomi are keeping secrets from her, and then the trio learn that one of the guests is an alien, just as the military arrives at Star Labs. Meanwhile, in the B-plot, Zimbardo and Dee are having a tiff over Naomi's training. Zimbardo agrees with me that we need to start moving the plot along by having Naomi use her powers more, while Dee thinks it's still too dangerous and exposition time is not yet over. They propose a no-power duel, but then Zimbardo cheats, because so will Naomi's enemies. And with that, they agree to train her together and call a truce. Finally, over in C-plot territory, which I have not seen happen in a while, Anthony and Nathan sign up to volunteer at Lourdes' comic store, I guess for class, for, like, school volunteer hours, because they think that she's just going to sign their form and send them home. But instead...
It's like volunteer humanitarian week or something.
Yeah. Instead, she makes them organize the whole store, despite it being empty because she has no customers. When they learn that she'll be selling her personal collection to pay for rent, they host an Lord of the Rings-themed trivia game to bring in clients. And that makes her mad, because Lord of the Rings is not related to comics, and she kicks them out. But they give her the money they raised anyway, and that makes her learn about the power of friendship. So they decide to work together to provide the shop and, you know, be happy, cool friends time. I totally forgot to write down the writer and the director, but that's okay. I'm sure they did great. What sparked joy?
This was an overall good episode. I was very into, like, each storyline because it gave something different. I like the fact that, because I feel like Jacobs has not been, he hasn't been in the episodes for a little while, right? So it was nice to see him kind of teaming up with Naomi, him being an alien enthusiast, and him discovering Naomi's secret. kind of like brings in somebody else into the circle, especially since he is also Annabelle's boyfriend. So you're like, okay, the puzzle pieces are starting to fit together. And it also just like the message of her not having to take everything on her own is really great, because, you know, no one can do everything by themselves. They do need a support team. And this is where Annabelle and Jacob especially come in, now that they know that she's an alien, and just Annabelle just being the greatest friend ever, continuing to be BFF number one. I really like the fact that, like, her parents got a little bit more to do this episode, because they were actually semi-active. We didn't see them be active, but we learned that they were trying to be active in preparing to, you know, go away at the drop of a hat, because if, like, something was to happen and the military's onto them and everything like that. So I like the fact that they have backups, and they've had backups for quite some time because of the fact that Naomi is an alien. And I also like the fact that, you know, Zumbaru and Dee were working together, even though they were butting head through most of the episode. I do think that they had interesting arguments, and the fact that they're now on the same page is really great, because we'll get to see, like, what strengths they'll both bring to Naomi's training and all of that good stuff. And I feel like even, like, the idea of, what was Annabelle saying? She's like, so we're friends with Zumbaru now? Like, that's really weird. and it feels like Dee feels the same way. He's like, I can't believe we're working with each other. But I think that it brings an interesting dynamic to the show, because Zumbaru was so separate before, and now he's kind of part of the in-group, and it gives Dee somebody else to work with besides Naomi, because that had kind of been played out for a while. So all good stuff there. And then also Lourdes being back in general, like, she actually has a plot. She's just not there to say hi or to flirt with Naomi. It's just something that we learn about her and her comic book store, and how, you know, she's not, you know, things are not, good things are not happening to this woman, and is really sad. But I like the fact that she knows now that she has friends she can rely on, who are just genuinely being kind because they wanted to help, even though they did not know that Lord of the Rings was not a comic book. Which was hilarious, because it's like, mind blown. So yeah, just an overall great episode. I feel like we're still slowly inching to the end of the season, but it finally feels like we're getting somewhere more significant.
Yeah, it definitely feels like we're picking up the pace. Although at this point, I feel like we'll see Brutus in the season one finale. But yeah, and by the way, the Gussie Rock wrote the episode, directed by Demaine Davis. I can't hear, you're on mute, Tati.
Oh, I said thank you. Thank you for finding out that valuable information.
Yeah. But I really enjoyed this episode for, like, a couple of different reasons. I like that, you know, as I mentioned, like, you know, it feels like the rhythm is picking up in all of the episodes, and it feels like we're rotating the character groups also. And that's giving everyone space to kind of develop their personality outside of Naomi, which we were saying in the beginning, it was a bit of an issue when you had all the Scooby Gang together at the same time. So we're getting different dynamics, but then also for Naomi as a character, the stakes for her are also rising, so it feels like she's more present in the show as well. I like that the parents having a to-go bag was, like, an issue, because it's something else that they were not hiding from her, but they were being prepared, but they didn't want, it's like, you know, when your parents do things, they don't include you in the conversation, it's because they want to protect you from, you know, what's going on, so you're not, like, freaking out or scared. But at this point, Naomi is in a position where she's like, this is a need-to-know basis, and she needs to know. And I feel like that's also echoed in the conflict between Dee and Zumbaru about what to do with her training. I like that there was this back and forth with them. They felt like two arguing exes trying to, like, co-parent. And I thought that was really sexy. I like when they're, like, you know, meeting at the junkyard, about to fight, like, yes, let's get physical. All right. And I'm like, when Zimbadu was like cheating and used his powers, it's like, that's not fair. There's rules of engagement. He's like, but you know, that there's rules, but people don't respect the rules. And I was like, yes, thank you. Because I feel like he has a point. Like, I agree with Tati and Zimbadu that, you know, it's good to do things the right way, but also we don't have time for that. So I like that there is that kind of like argument. You know, on the one hand, like Zimbadu is being like realistic, and that is exactly true. But I also like that he cares so much about Naomi's like emotional well-being, because like when he's like, well, what about her friends? She gets too emotional. Something could happen to her friends. And Zimbadu's like, well, that's just the price you're gonna have to pay. And he's like, whoa, 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 whoa. So you know, they both care on different levels, and they both have right reasonings. But it's just kind of figuring out how they can be the yin to the other's yang, and like helping Naomi the best they can in the short amount of time that they do have. I liked that also there was this kind of push and pull between Naomi and Annabelle, the first kind of little disagreement they had in their friendship that we've seen about, you know, Naomi's desire to push Annabelle away to protect her versus Annabelle's desire to want to face the danger with her together. So I thought that was a nice little dynamic. It didn't spark joy, but it did not spark joy that of the Scooby Gang, the first person outside of Annabelle to learn about Naomi's powers is Jacob. Like, I was like, you know, I'm a little bummed because it wasn't necessarily Naomi's choice to reveal her powers. But Jacob does have the most useful skill set of all of her friends in terms of, like, his alien knowledge and nerdiness, so it's helpful to have him as a member of like her active team or whatever. So if he has to know, like, I'm not mad at it. What else? I feel like even with the C plot of Nathan, Anthony, Loris, first of all, I like that Loris is here, and I agree that it's good that her storyline and her involvement in the episode is not making hard eyes at Naomi, and that's a good thing. We get to learn more about Lourdes after her being absent for so long, and I felt like even that dynamic, it wasn't like there wasn't anything really going on there, but it was decent. You know, it was an enjoyable kind of like departure from all of the tension that was going on in the other plot. I think it's very weird that Nathan and Anthony are like besties now. but I also think it's just, they have no thoughts between them. They just like share a brain cell. But they are very sweet in wanting to, and you know, even though they did not understand comics or that the Lord of the Rings is a completely different thing, it was an A for effort, you know, it was a thought that counted. And, when they finally were starting to take this seriously, it kind of showed how much they were willing to show up for Lourdes. And even though they had all been rivals, they considered her a friend, and you show up for friends because that's just what you do. So I like that little, them trying to get her to open up her friend circle and let them in. So that was cute. Also, the reason that I like that Lourdes is back is because my theory is about to come true. Whoop! Because, okay, she comes back, and then coincidentally, in the same episode, someone sneaks through Naomi's window and steals her disc. So have we seen you do that? The only person I've seen sneak through my window is Lourdes. Thank you. And then second of all, Lourdes coming back in the same episode that Jacob builds an alien detector and discovers that there's an alien present at the party. Right after we saw a scene of Lourdes joining the party and saying hi to like Nathan and Anthony. Hello, coincidence? I think not. So, you know, my theory is not so far-fetched after all, and I'm very happy about that. That's it.
It is a beautiful theory, and it puts her back into the story, like for real, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I love to see a plan coming together. So I hope that it does indeed turn out to be true. I also really enjoyed the episode. I thought that it was a really nice use of more characters than are usually used. So I especially, even though, like, we've already seen the pairing between Anthony and Nate, it was nice to get, like, a different side to them. Like you said, the now sharing one brain cell side is what happens now that they are friends. They can go and torment other friends. It also was nice for them to help Lourdes open up so that her only connection isn't really Naomi. Now she is learning what it is like to have other friends. And if the reason she did not know what friends were is because she is an alien, then maybe this will, you know, change her alien ways. Mm-hmm. And E.T. will no longer need to phone home or whatever she was doing before. So overall, that plot was very cute and fun. Didn't take up too much time. Wasn't boring. It was just enjoyable. A nice time. Also, I do agree that it was nice to see new shades of Naomi's parents. And that once again, there's always like a little, they're like, every once in a while, they just go a little bit into the sketch. And then they pull it back. But for Naomi to actually feel, you know, like, responsible for their situation or feel like she's a burden and them to have to, like, assuage her from it, be like, no, you're a gift and we'll do whatever it is to protect you, whatever, was nice. It was nice to see her going out of her way to try to, like, balance the scales with him or whatever, which she doesn't need to do because they love her anyway, etc. Overall, still good. Also, like, that we got a fight between, that not just that we got a fight between Annabelle and Naomi, but also that then it was just resolved, just like, well, of course we're going to fight, you know, yeah, we had a fight and it's terrible, but now we don't have to fight anymore. We are unfighting. And it was a lot of fun to see Jacob and Naomi team up. I enjoyed that little dynamic, and because, like, Jacob is so into this stuff, it makes sense.
I just realized, like, in the middle of you talking about, like, Jacob and, like, Naomi and Annabelle fight, Lord of the Rings scene, Jacob gave Naomi advice using Sam. Frodo and Sam.
That was great when he was like, and then Frodo was going to leave, and what did Samwise say? Samwise was like, no, I'm, you know, it's my choice to stay by your side. Yeah, that was super cute. And so it just makes sense that Jacob would be the first one because he is kind of like the nerd that is into that stuff anyway, as we have already seen. Anthony and Nate would be of no help. And as Jessica has probably correctly predicted, Lourdes would not be the ideal person because she is like an alien with an opposing agenda, I would assume. So, there we go. Anyway, it was a lot of fun. Plus, I've been wanting her to be using her powers to save people and be put in a position. So, like, it makes sense that her, like, one of the few times that she gets to do that, she just gets caught because she's not good at hiding that yet. So, all good there. Thank God for Zumbaru making all the sense, saying, please hurry this along. And thank you, Dee, for not taking more than one episode to agree. What did not spark joy?
It was resolved, so it's not that bad. But I was irritated a little bit that Naomi was like, no, you can't tell Annabelle. But he's like, but I thought, like, Annabelle and I are together. You and Annabelle are best friends. I don't get why I can't tell. That did not make sense to me. I was like, why would you try to alienate people in your life who are trying to help you? But I'm glad that was resolved. And otherwise, I still want more of, like, plot stuff. Like, I feel like if Lourdes is, in fact, an alien, they could have actually given us clues of that beforehand because she disappeared for episodes on end and we don't know much about her still, even though I feel like we know now more about her than we know about Anthony and Nathan collectively. And also, like, they did this whole love triangle-ish thing for so long. And then she and Nathan get together, and yet they share no significant scenes. So I feel like I don't know why that was such a big deal, if they're not actually going to do anything with it, because now it's like Nathan and Anthony are sort of dating, and Naomi's off in her own plot. So just like little things like that, that it would be best if they're going to, like, lean into certain storylines, like if they're going to give her parents more agency or whatever. Like, I want them to lean into that versus, like, sort of giving it to us and then stepping right back without actually doing much with it anyway.
Yeah, I like the split up of the groups. I think Nathan and Anthony being besties is like really, really weird, but it's not like a dislike. It's just like a, just, you know, running on vibes. That's it. But, you know, they're fun together as a single unit. I guess, like, I kind of like most of my dislikes are just minor. Like, I've already said them, you know. The other one was just like Jacob learning that Naomi is an alien just because it wasn't really her choice to divulge it. It was almost like a couple episodes ago when they were at the camp and I thought that Anthony was going to figure it out and I almost had like a blood vessel burst, like, no! So this is like the less angry version of that. And then I think I also mentioned just like offhandedly in my during my life that even though we are ramping up, it does feel like Brutus will just like come in the cliffhanger of the finale or something, you know. And we're not really like, I haven't seen a Carrie in a while, so we finally had some more light shed on Zimbadi, but I'm still confused about where the other 29 and did they all die. Did we learn that? Did they all die? And just, like, him and Akira left?
I don't know, actually.
I don't think they all died. I think it was, like, they were all exposed or they were all, like, taken or, like, whatever. Like, I think some did die, but if they made it sound like there were other survivors. It's just that we don't know what happened to them. Because he did say, like, they didn't trust me anymore or whatever, not just her, if I remember correctly.
Okay, yeah. I'm stalling for time. I don't really have a lot of... not joy, super not joy in this episode.
Which is a good thing. Well, I guess I can say my not joys, which there are also not very many of. On the one hand, I do agree that it feels kind of weird to just drop Lourdes back in the plot just as we're ramping up the alien thing, so that, like, yes, you could make the connection that she is one, but then we don't get to ever see her doing anything, like, shady beforehand or, like, interesting or anything because she's just not there. So it doesn't really feel like there's been much build-up for it. And considering how slow the plot of the season has been, I feel like they could have done a lot more adding building blocks in general. It feels like there are some episodes where they are, like, info dump, building block, plot development, and then other episodes where it's just like, this is a PSA on why it's cool to have snacks in your vending machines or whatever. And then the other thing is just in that same token, there are only 5 episodes left of the season. And I was like, wait, what? How? Nothing has happened yet. So I guess we'll see where that goes. But it would be a shame, I think, if it got canceled, because I don't feel like they've really utilized the premise as much as they could have. Like, there's so much potential in this story that we have barely even scratched the surface of. So I hope that they wrap it up in the next 5 episodes and that we get to see that potential blossom in a season 2. Do we have a feedback for Naomi?
So I was looking for Swara, but I don't see him.
Swara hates us. He said no more. All right. So if we failing that, do we have non-Lourdes is an alien predictions?
I have an expansion on Lourdes is an alien
prediction. Okay.
I am wondering, since I'm just going to take it as a fact that she's the one that snuck in, and because who else knows where Naomi's room is? Like, come on. So she stole the disc, but why did she steal the disc? Did she steal the disc because someone else mentioned it, like Akira sent her to steal the disc? And that's how we're getting Akira back? Is the military, do they have her or her mom or whoever? And she has to do what they say and part of that is getting the disc? I don't know, you know? So I feel like she is doing something that is potentially betrayal, quote unquote, but betrayal for a good cause.
Betrayal for charity.
Feral Security. Because she doesn't know friendship and the power of having friends that would be for her no matter what. She can't, like, unburden herself, and now she's just suffering in silence and stealing Naomi's things.
Yeah, and if the government has a parent, then, you know, I'm going to defend her.
I support it. I definitely agree that if she is the alien and doing the things, it will be for a good reason, because they will not alienate her as a character.
Do we think, like, going back to the No-Joys, I just thought about this, because next week is a bottle episode. They spend the whole episode in the party trying to figure out who the alien is.
Mm-hmm.
So does this go again with your whole of why aren't we speeding up the plot? Or I guess we'll have like a B plot of, I mean, what are Dee and Zubata going to do? Look at each other sexually?
I would not be opposed.
Right? Maybe they'll get a lead on Dee's love. I don't know. Could be. But no, I think that will actually help us, because then presumably we'll find out who the alien is and get the reasoning or whatever, you know? So that will actually be for the plot. It's just, we're still not going bigger scale, but I don't need big scale. I just need, you know, going in.
I think it would be, like, I feel like while that's happening, because what's his face? Military man, whose name I can't remember, found the bunker, right? Like their little hideout of stuff.
Right.
So I have to imagine that he'd be like trying to hunt Naomi at the same time while they were questioning the guests, like while they can't go anywhere.
They found the bunker, or they found, because I thought they were at Star Labs.
Oh, Star Labs, yes.
But they found.
But they have something, yes.
Yeah, yeah. So perhaps if she's not working with the government, it could lead them to Lourdes then. They could mistake Lourdes for Naomi, kind of thing. And then we have to rescue Lourdes.
But one of the things that I was, like, nervous about when, before she accidentally exposed herself to Jacob, and they were looking through, because he was, like, on a treasure hunt. He was, like, having a ball of advice trying to steal some Star Lab stuff to take back with him. I feel like Dr. Bell had to have kept videos and recordings of all of her stuff in there. So I was concerned about what if he takes a drive that shows that Naomi is an alien, and they'd be like, oh my god, Naomi's an alien, but then he found out, but still, they took a drive, but there could still be stuff in Star Lab that contains proof of either Naomi's, like, DNA signature, or video of her entering and exiting, or whatever, so that could also be something that the military finds.
It certainly could be. It certainly could be. Either way, it will be problems for Naomi. And so, with that, I suppose we can go to side B, which is Heat Exchange, The Flash. The episode was called The Fire Next Time, which is also a James Baldwin novel. So I was like, that's weird. I don't know if that is what they meant, but okay. So, the recently promoted...
I can't even compare it to James Baldwin.
Exactly. That's why I was like, that's an interesting choice. But anyway, the recently paroled Jacko, whatever his name is, Birch, the hotness, is arrested for the incineration of O'Shaughnessy's manager, Stan Mullen, with whom he was arguing the night prior. He professes his innocence and desire to be there for his son, Harold. With there being no hard evidence against the hotness, and on Henry Island's birthday, no less, Barry becomes determined to convince his team of the hotness's innocence. Cecile is for some reason against this, despite being a defense attorney whose job it is to prove her client's innocent, and she's like, I just can't possibly do it. It's not innocent. And I was like,
I can't defend a guilty client.
I have ethics.
Right. Flash and Frost find the bartender Donna Winters incinerated, and Chester discovers the methods of burning do not match the hotness's abilities.
I think it's Jocko, because I feel like they kept sounding like they're saying Jacob, but it's like,
yeah,
and I
kept thinking it was literally spelled like Jocko. Jocko tries to kidnap Harold from social services, and Harold reunites. Nope. And the Flash convinces him to stop a lava channel from erupting instead. Because it is so cool of his dad to use his powers for good, Harold happily reunites with his dad after calling him a loser all episode long. And then that night, Joe's family celebrates. Henry's birthday. Later, Team Flash focuses their efforts on finding the real serial killer. At CCC Media, Iris and Allegra interview social media influencer Rosie Levin with newbie writer Taylor Downs, but Allegra shirks the interview out of pettiness and winds up pursuing a story involving ex-con Lydia Sanchez. Iris agrees to publish both stories because Allegra's is really good and because Taylor's was supposed to have gone up anyway, but Taylor still threatens to destroy Allegra when the latter tries to apologize. Somehow, Iris is no longer concerned about her time sickness. Directed by David McWhorter and written by Joshua B. Gilbert. What sparked joy?
Well, obviously, I have to start with my favorite side of this episode, which is finally we have premium Iris content after episodes of just nothingness. It was really great to see her. And I made like the comment on Twitter, like, this is the best example of what we mean, or at least I mean, when I say that I want to see more of Iris's journalism and her building her empire. I thought the conversation that she had with Allegra in the first scene was really great, you know, with her and Allegra having a disagreement about what stories should be important stories, and Iris kind of, you know, putting on her boss lady hat and being like, listen, I know that you have a good eye for these things, but you're not the only person that has a good perspective sometimes. Other people do as well. You have to, like, listen to those other perspectives, because at the end of the day, you're trying to sell newspapers here. That's how we get to be number four in the country, baby. You got a diversified field. And I like that, for me, it felt like Supergirl level of putting attention into journalism the way it should be. So it felt very like Cat Grant and Kara talking about how to be a good journalist. And I really, really liked that. Even though this plot wasn't even about Iris, because it was mainly about Allegra having tunnel vision and not wanting to share the playground. it was still just very good seeing that side of journalism in the show and that being connected to, like, to Iris's orbit. So I love seeing her, and I love seeing the newspaper and its perspective, and I feel like we should have more of it, and we have to have more of it consistently. And, you know, eventually, like, every now and then it crosses over with the plot. I think in the plot itself, on the Allegra side of it, it was a good, there's a lot, who wrote this episode again? Josh Gilbert?
Joshua
Gilbert,
yeah. I don't know
who wrote the Black Lives Matter episode, but this is a better conversation on, I feel like, the justice system than whatever they were trying to do the last time. Because you have the difference between Allegra and Lydia, who both went into Iron Heights at the same time, or, you know, were there in there at the same time. They both got out, but the difference in how Allegra's life turned out just by the pure fact of her crossing paths with Team Flash and getting this, all of these opportunities versus someone like Lydia, who didn't have anybody really kind of, like, looking out for her. It's trying to make an honest living, but it's still not really improving her life in the pace or in the way that she wants to. And the difference in the way that people, if you saw them sitting next to each other, would look at Allegra versus how they look at Lydia. And even Lydia detects it in how Allegra kind of views her as, you know, not being on the same level, and Allegra kind of having to check her perspective, and that kind of influencing her to write the article that she did write. So I thought all of that was very interesting. And then you also have that in the main side of the plot with Jocko, the hotness, and the fact that he says he's innocent, but all of the justice, the things in the circumstantial evidence surrounding the case point to him not being that way, and no one really trying to go beyond surface level of what the facts appear to be to kind of help him. You've got his son, you know, in danger of being, like, lost to the system. You know, you're looking out for them, and how that connects to Barry, and how when he was young, you know, and Henry was taken away from him, and it was kind of the same. He seemed like history repeat itself a little bit, and that kind of pulled at his heartstrings to pay attention to Jocko more than he probably normally would have if this had not happened to him, been his experience. So he and Allegra kind of like parallel each other throughout this episode, which I thought was really interesting. And the main plot, I feel like once we kind of understood, because in the beginning of it was a little weird and trying to figure out why Barry was sad all of a sudden today of all days. But as the episode unfolded and we got to see why he was acting this way, I like the tie-ins back to Henry and making it kind of like a not memorial, but like anniversary of like Henry's death. Because usually, and I thought for a minute that they were going to do something, they were doing something about like Nora's death again, which you've seen him, you know, grieve her for 7-8 seasons. And when I thought it was her again, I was like, you know, I was thinking like, well, why, you know, Henry died too. So the fact that this is the episode that they got to explore that, not only how that helped Barry see things from another perspective and solve a case, but also they took the time to remember him and have that little happy West Island family memory sesh at the end, where they just kind of think about all of the good memories they had of Henry. Kind of reminds you how close the two families were before Nora died and Barry moved in with the West. So it makes even more sense why Joe would take Barry in when you hear him talk to Barry about, you know, you remember when you're on your father's birthday and blah, 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 and how Joe and Henry had a friendship, and how, you know, they're connected through their kids being friends. So all of that just kind of made it very sweet in memory kind of episode for Henry Allen. So I like that as well.
Yeah, I agree about that. I think that it was unexpected about Henry's birthday. And I was also struggling because, like, the camera pointed at the calendar. I'm like, what does it say?
I was trying to read it. It was so fast. I'm like, I can't see that.
But once we figured it out, I was like, okay, I understand. So I did like Barry's plot in that he wanted to save someone from basically the justice system, because I like the parallel too of having Jocko kind of be perceived as immediately guilty because of his record and so on, and how that reflected Allegra's friend's story also, that's the only way she's seen, even though she's not, you know, she doesn't do anything anymore and she has a job, and like no one will give her a chance to show that the past is the past and like we need to move forward. So I really liked that message in general, and I agree it did a much better job than last year in tackling some, you know, a sensitive subject. And I like the way that they went about it in general, because like with the hotness, you know, we've seen him before, and it's now this version of him is just like, I don't do that anymore, like you can't hold that against me and so on. So I really like the push-pull that gave Barry against his team, who all just for whatever reason did not want to believe the best in people on this day because the plot required them to do so. But I did like all of that, and I even liked Allegra's plot line with Iris, and the fact that like we got to actually see CCC Media, what's been going on there, how stories break basically, and how sometimes even if you want to really write a great piece, sometimes you don't necessarily attract readers unless you pull in somebody more popular, like an influencer who is known, and you get eyeballs on your article, and that hopefully, you know, keeps people around. But I like the push-pull there and kind of like humanitarian pieces and things about that are really important about the city and about its people, versus like, you know, social media influencers rise to stardom or whatever. So I like that, as well as like putting Allegra in a position where she's still very much acting like a regular writer and not as a boss, and Iris is the boss, trying to make her think like the boss. It's like, you can't do that to your people, and you have to apologize because you did this, you know, taking responsibility and ownership over her actions. So I really like that. And I do hope we see more of it, but it was really nice that we got back to CCC media a little bit this episode. I really like the fact that, like, we just got small glimpses of, you know, Joe reminiscing about Henry, his little speech to Barry, his little heartfelt moment with him was really nice. And just people, like, thinking about Henry in that way. And that was really, it just shows so much history. And it was a great moment in just having a family moment, because I feel like we haven't really seen that in a while. That wasn't plot driven, you know? So it was just nice for them to sit around and have a beer and just talk. So yeah, that was nice. And I think, I mean, overall the episode in general didn't put me to sleep. So hey, you know, a bonus.
Improvement.
Even though I thought Jocko-san was very disrespectful, when he kept calling him Jocko, I was like, this is your child? This is your son? No, that was too much.
Hey, well, he was in jail for like half a kid's life, so.
He was in jail for 4 years.
I also thought that was a grown man. I thought that was like a 25-year-old man.
I was thinking about like Mac Adler being like, you're in Glee with Grant. Like, y'all are the same age. Like, how does this kid have a son? That's like 18. He's going to be 18 in like a month.
I thought that this was definitely like a better episode than last week's for sure. And arguably better than the previous one because it was about the characters that the main characters. So like, that's good. But yeah, I like that Grant had the opportunity to really like dig into Barry's emotions again. I feel like it's been a while since he's really gotten to like tap into like the Barry feels from the early seasons that like make him the Flash. So it was nice to bring that back around and to explore his feelings on, you know, not getting enough time with his dad, which he's definitely done before, but not to the same extent that he's revisited, like, his mom dying. So it was nice to get the other perspective. And as you guys pointed out, it did lead to a really nice moment with Joe. We haven't had very much of, like, Papa West lately, so it was nice to really get the family vibe between them and have him give those comforting words of wisdom that always bring Barry to his senses, that they have tried to replicate with a seal and have never succeeded in doing so. So very happy to have, you know, OG West Patriarch doing the pep talks. Also was nice, the nice touch of Iris immediately realizing what was happening when she looked at the calendar. And so you get that sense of, like, this happens every year. He has, like, a day or whatever, however long that he's, like, down, right? But he's not, like, himself. And it's not a huge deal, but it's enough for her to be like, oh, why don't we just stay in, kind of thing. So they did a good job of making it feel like this is something that always happens, even though we have literally never seen it happen before in all 8 years of watching The Flash. So yeah, I thought they'd handle that really well. And then it makes sense that he would then be fixated on this case because it reminds him of his father. And even though I will have things to say about this on the flip side, I did like that it was also an opportunity for him to have to convince the team to back him on this, for him to have to, like, make the team believe in the impossible again, just like in the early seasons. It was like, do you believe in the impossible? We are the Flash. So, yes. Also support that. Glad that the ending was heartwarming for Jocko and Harold, the oldest-looking 17-year-old child I've ever seen in my life. And it was nice that then, you know, we ended with, like, a West Allen moment. Even with that West Allen family, obviously. Not an actual West Allen moment, but the West Allen family remembering Henry and us remembering the imprint of where Jenna might be if she actually existed and wasn't a figment of everyone's imagination. So, yeah, all of that was really sweet. And then on the Iris side of things, and Allegra, because really it was her storyline, but we're going to call it the Iris side of things, I also liked seeing her as a mentor, seeing how she handles her business, and the fact that she really did get, like, she was right the whole time, A, but B, she's also, like, fair in that she's not going to set aside what is actually a good story and what is actually an important message, which they did handle better than they usually handle these things in terms of just, like, what does it mean when you've been rehabilitated, supposedly you're back in society, but society will not accept you. So I did like that, and I would have been happy to explore that further if it hadn't been Allegra, you know, just going off on her own and not doing her job properly. But I did appreciate her instinct and Iris's instinct to publish it, but also to take her to task and hold her accountable for not having a properly trained or supervised Taylor. And just being rude to this interview subject. It's not like she begged you for the interview. You're doing the interview. So anyway. So yeah. Overall, really cool to see Iris, you know, as a boss bitch. And I guess it's nice to see Allegra also growing into her own. I don't dislike Allegra. I only resent her for getting things that Iris should have gotten that she did not do. But she does feed into Iris' storyline, so I can't be mad. Overall, I like their chemistry. I like their team up. I'm happy to see more CCP, CCC media stories with both of them. What did not spark joy?
I will say, though, that, like you said in the recap, you didn't think, like Iris' time sickness just completely disappeared. But I think, I mean, it wasn't really alluded to, but the reason why she kind of stayed firm with Allegra and kind of took her to task is because it does feel like she is preparing Allegra, like, I'm not always going to be around. I need you to develop some people skills and some management skills quickly. So I feel like that was also in the undercurrent of it. Going into things that did not spark joy, just right off the top, I have to say, on Twitter, when I wrote that thing about, like, Iris, you know, we want to see more journalism, and then some, like, rando just like, oh, it's one of the Globe and Iris show, and I'm just like, fuck off, please, like, go away, like, if so-called real Flash fans aren't watching The Flash anymore, then why the fuck do you care how much screen time Iris gets on her fucking show? Like, go away. that was a no joy for me. It's just like, why are you still here? Like, why are you getting into the tag? Because they're like, oh my God, such animosity. I'm like, I said, please. You know, I said, fuck off, please.
What more do they want from you?
Very polite. And Twitter was like, are you sure you want to tweet this? I'm like, yes. I thought about my words, but I want to tweet it. But I hate that line of excuse of, you know, whenever Iris breathes that it's an issue and it's the Iris show and all this other stupid shit. Just like, stop. Stop watching the show. And if you're not watching the show, stop going into the tag and commenting on people that are, you know, enjoying their character on the screen. Just stop it. So that just sparked no joy. But into the actual episode, I would say that obviously Allegra was being really kind of rude and kind of like, I feel like she had like a superiority thing since she's been with Iris the longest and she feels like they're on the same wavelength. And so, you know, as unwelcoming as they were to the other reports were to Allegra being their boss, I feel like she's not very open or receptive to them as well. And you can kind of see that in how she, you know, she was judging Lydia low key, but she's also was judging Taylor like high key on what Taylor values as a journalist versus what she values as a journalist in her point of view. And I feel like, you know, some people were debating on whether Iris should have talked to her this way or not, but to Allegra. But I feel like Allegra, if she had done her job, like she did do a good interview, and the interview was great, and it's a story that needs to be told. But if she had done her job, Taylor's piece could have been elevated as well. And you know, like Tati said, like, Rosie, whatever, wasn't banging on their door for an interview. They came to her because they said, we want your story. So the least Allegra could have done, even if she didn't like the Rosie's, you know, privilege, attitude, or whatever, where the piece was going, she was there. She had the ability to ask different questions and challenge Rosie on the point of view and the things that she wanted to, she could have adapted the interview towards something that felt like it had a story more than being a puff piece, if that was her issue with it. And she just didn't do that. And then not only did she not do that, when she came back, she completely like cut Taylor out, zoned her out to do her own story. Like, yeah, this is going to be great. Like, what did she think that Iris is just not going to do Taylor's story anymore at all? So it's, you know, she had a lot of negatives. She got a lot of marks off on her first, you know, editor quest to get along with Taylor. I did think Taylor was being, she is on her way to becoming a Karen. I'm not particularly mad at it right now, just because I think that a letter shouldn't just be like, oh, I'm sorry, and then it's just like kind of brushing under the rug. So I feel like it's I'm okay with there being some kind of like rivalry there of Allegra not getting this the easy kind of way. But she's like, Taylor is low key kind of like a Karen.
Yeah, so yeah, she really is.
In the future, that not spark and joy. Oh, I guess Barry had an low. Well, I mean, it's just Team Flash not believing in him, but no, what else is new? I did think, I will say it with Jocko, I don't know if he was this bad the last time he was a hotness, but some of his, you know, like raising his arms, like, and now the CGI will put fire on me. It was very kind of robotic-ish. That was a little bit kind of corny. And I felt like his, you know, I don't know if it was like the script or just again, you know, his being his quick temper and hot and quote unquote hotness, it was kind of like flipping a light switch as opposed to any kind of, I don't know. That's all I can say. I don't know. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I have to say, I don't actually remember the first time he came on the show. I was
Iris was the Flash, and he was her villain.
Oh, yes. Okay. There we go. It feels like, you know, ages ago at this point. but I agree about the Allegra stuff. I feel like she wasn't... A good editor is supposed to guide writers to be their best selves for an article, and she clearly was still not in the supervising mode. Yeah,
she's still in like the writer's mode.
Yeah, very much so. And I don't, and this goes also towards the fact that I still don't think she's ready to, like, I feel like Iris kind of gave her supervisor duties too easily. Like, I don't think she'd earned them yet.
Yeah.
And this is clearly why. obviously, like, characters should grow and everything like that. I just feel like, because they haven't really focused on Iris's journalism that much, they could have like a whole team where this was a thing, and then we could see even Allegra grow as a journalist alongside of her. But I do feel like Allegra being mentored by Iris does make me feel bitter that Iris did not get that same mentorship from other journalists. Like, Mason was gone too soon, and then she was not a journalist for a while, and then when she was back, it's like, I'm going to start my own company. But we didn't really see the growth. Things just kind of happen on this show, and I think that's what just continues to be frustrating. And in the other plot with Barry, I felt like, of all the times, like, Cecile, this episode was just very insincere. Like, you left your old job to help Metas, right? This guy is a Meta. The fact that she wouldn't even consider that he's innocent at all is really bizarre, especially since she had no issue. There was one witness that was on the stand, and yeah, she was like reading their feelings or whatever, and now it's an ethical problem.
Other thing that like really like annoyed me, her saying that I can't read his mind, that's unethical. I'm like, you do this all the time.
Exactly, like to everybody.
You did this later in the episode.
Her paths, and all the time. So that made no sense, and I felt like it was way too convenient for the plot, because it didn't make any sense with regards to, you know, her previous actions in other episodes. So that was irritating. And I do feel like the pacing is off after Armageddon, you know, the last three episodes. Just like, we get some things and we don't get other things. Like, I feel like it still doesn't feel like it's building towards anything. And with the time sickness plot, I feel like it's still weird that there hasn't been any sort of discussion on it, or about how Iris is feeling, or anything related to her time sickness. And I know we're getting to it, but there should still be hints and clues, and you know, especially since she was back in this episode for a longer period than like 30 seconds. So I don't know. It's just off. So off.
Okay. So for me, first of all, big, like, my biggest dislike this episode is probably Cecile. Just, like, the idea that this plot line was obviously centered, or not obviously, but, like, was the easiest conduit to actually get to see Cecile do the job that she had, like, derailed her whole career to do for, like, the very reasons that she had wanted to do it. And then instead, she's suddenly like, that's unethical. And also, if my client is guilty, how do you expect me to defend him? I was like, are you crazy? Like, do you not know how to do your job? It should just be like, well, yes, Barry, I will help you. I have to warn you, I don't think he's innocent, but I will still do my best. And instead, she was like, how do you build a defense? It's so hard. So I was like, all right, whatever. You are stupid, Cecile. That was my biggest problem. My other than the Allegra side of things, just that I feel like I get that they're trying to do a learning curve with Allegra or whatever, and I understand why she would want to pursue the story of her friend who was also, like, weirdly rude to her for no reason. It was so strange. She was like, people like you. And I was like, what do you mean, people like you? You were both in jail together. What are you talking about? So I was very confused. I thought, like, Allegra had, like, failed to help her previously and not just, like, obtained a better job after jail, but whatever. So anyway, Allegra was, like, really unprofessional and, like, really did not care that she was being unprofessional. I thought it was very strange, and it reflects poorly on Iris that she would just, like, let Allegra run amok like that. I know it's not supposed to. It's just supposed to be, like, a learning experience, but it just looks dumb. Like, it just looks like this. You would never get away with this. This would never happen. I know Matt Minovich tweeted, and he was like, I just hope that y'all know that Allegra got off super easy. And then just like, side-eye emoji. I was like, yeah, this would never happen. It's so ridiculous. So, yeah, I would have rather seen Iris mentor Taylor through that interview than see Allegra fail to mentor Taylor. But that's okay. It worked, you know, like, it worked out for the most part. But I just thought that, like, it was, like, Allegra was, like, rude to, like, the point of stretching disbelief. And also just that she was so oblivious, thinking that Iris was just going to love this piece and Taylor was not going to require any help, because why would she write anything after Allegra had written this amazing thing that Taylor doesn't even know she's doing? Like, for all Taylor knows, Allegra's just writing her piece without having been at the interview. So anyway, it just overall very weird. Very, very strange. Like, a lot of times people just don't behave like real people, because they just behave like they're being written in this script so that they can get to this point. So that's, like, the difference between The Flash now and The Flash in the olden days. But overall, I'm not too mad about it, because I did enjoy the episode more so than the previous few. And then in terms of Iris and the time sickness, like, you are right that the way that she was trying to, like, prep Allegra could feel like, hey, I might not be around, right? Something might happen to me. Mm-hmm. I just would have liked there to be, like, more concern in other areas. Like, maybe I was expecting something in the Barry and Iris scene. Like, maybe she was going to be behaving in a certain way. Or, like, why would she keep it a secret if she thinks it's happening? Like, it made me wonder if I was supposed to believe that her dad did indeed convince her it was a food coma, or if she just has a reason to keep it a secret. But either way, I would have liked to, like, see that process, I guess.
I think it would have been more interesting if, like, if she didn't previously know she had time sickness, then I could see how she
would dismiss it. Right, it was the first time. It's like,
my mind's just whatever, you know? Mm-hmm. But she knows that it's a thing.
That's what's so weird. And the fact that we didn't get to see it the first time, like, she was literally off screen for it. And now it's coming back, and it's like, it's not really important until the episode that it's important. Don't worry about it. She's like, well, then don't show it to us. So, anyway, do we have feedback?
We do. And I was going to say, like, I feel like I got sidetracked by my rant against, like, assholes on Twitter. But, like, the other thing that I was going to mention is the fact that it was Henry's birthday and not the day that Henry got arrested day or Henry's death day. Because I get the connection to Henry in the story, but I just felt it was a little bit lopsided. It would have been, I think it's probably even more so than maybe his death day, because then that's like an anniversary that you have to remember. But yeah, like, either when he got arrested or when he died would have been a more, like, a stronger connection to what was going on in Barry's present than it just randomly being like his birthday.
Yeah. I felt like they only did that so they could have then a story of his last free birthday, but the way they got to it was very strange. I remember, like, I was just thinking, okay, it's the mom's 10th anniversary.
Well, as, like, his, he said that that was the last birthday because the next one, he went to jail. So did he get, like, arrested on his birthday? Is that what the, I don't know.
I don't know, but yeah, I agree that it was, like, a very circuitous route.
Yeah. Anywho, Sonia had exams and stuff going on this week, so she is running late on her feedback, and we will read your feedback next time. But Anita had feedback for us. She says, I'm not sure why, but I lost a little bit of feeling for Stan's demise when I realized he was underpaying his hardworking bartender, Donna, and he shortchanged Jocko on the guitar sale. Eat the rich! Then I remember his charge remains. Okay, my humanity is back. I paused the shot of West Allen's fridge calendar. They have great eyesight, by the way, but didn't see anything hinting at Henry's birthday. Still, no wonder Barry was a little downcast. Eric is retconning Iris, and it is alarming, despite the polished production value and the beautiful hopping CCC media digs, which always spark joy. Serious journalists like Iris would be way more interested in a profile about Lydia, a reformed convict trying to reintegrate into society. How does Iris end up chastising Allegra over Rosie, who clearly ginned up the concept of institutional learning as a prison, rather than admitting that she parties her GPA away at Cornell and daddy cut her off? Iris has a beautifully framed poster of Ida B. Wells in her office, so I don't like Eric's suggestion suddenly that Allegra is ready to take over so soon from the incredible woman who inaugurated the Meta beat at Picture News, routinely walks into danger to get stories, and built a media company. Now Iris' newsroom is on the verge of war, and for what? A girl who couldn't hack it at college? But for the fact that we've seen the future and Iris is in full control and fighting at CCC Media with its own skyscraper and satellite, Eric's attempt to undercut Iris in her own house would bother me. But the future is fungible. Fungible? Is that what you meant to say?
Maybe, lady? Maybe it's something like NFTs, non-fungible tokens. I don't know.
I don't know. Allegra is being groomed to take over, and we haven't heard that Candace is on season 9. No defense squad will save Eric or the show's respectability if he pulls an Abby Mills season 3 ender. And her time sickness isn't really being integrated into the season. But this is about the Flash, one half of what used to be an hour of fun, entertainment with heart. I'm glad Iris told Barry she's just a phone call away because he could have used an ally. Didn't these people just rally behind Killer Frost against all odds? It did not spark joy when Killer Frost said, honestly, it feels like you're asking us to believe something impossible. They need to believe in the impossible to do their jobs. Why couldn't Iris call Barry to check on him? She is a compassionate wife, and while Barry was pouring his heart out to Iris, she could have said something supportive, which triggered a hunch that Barry would investigate, and that would have exonerated Jocko. I did say, like, on Twitter that, you know, like, you know who would have helped, given him the benefit of the doubt and had some brainstorm? Iris. Mm-hmm.
That's why she couldn't call, because then he'd have to be allies.
Part of another person. How can she not believe in the impossible?
Feel it. Oh yeah, true.
So whatever.
Then she gives out like a mini conversation of what could have happened, what the scene could have been like. So I'll leave that for Tumblr. A little bit of like West Allen scene fan fiction for you guys. And that is that on that.
We love that. Do we have predictions that put Iris in season 9?
I don't know, guys. I don't know.
I'm still
it's
looking like,
bad out here.
What I said last time still stands, that, you know, she will go off, and then he will go off in the future and stay with her for a while, and then season 9 something will happen. He's like, oh, you know what? I go back to the present, and then we're, you know, get out of jail free card. Whether or not Iris could stay in the future, if it's better for her over there, and then that's an excuse not to have Candace, but who knows?
Yeah.
I could say that, but I would. I feel like, given that we know about the kids coming, like having lived and from whenever they were born into 2049, like where in the future would she be? She would have to have raised them in her timeline, right?
They would just be in a different timeline when they came back. They would just change their past, future, whatever as well.
Didn't they already, like, know about, I mean, they teased that they knew about her time sickness stuff when they first appeared in, like, the 150th episode.
I mean, like, in the season 9 series finale, Iris could come back and have birth, give birth, and then
That's true. You know? She doesn't have to stay there. Yeah, just for the duration of the show or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, I predict that The Flash will not be on our list of shows to review.
Absolutely.
If that happens.
Because I'm like some people, when I say that I'm done watching a show, I don't watch it anymore. And I don't go to the tag and look at people that do.
All right, then. Do we have a Lady with Gumption of the Week? Nominees? Winners?
I think this is difficult. Because who is, like, you know, aside from Naomi, if we want to say it's Naomi, but you have Annabelle and Lourdes, really.
Yeah. I mean,
and Lourdes did nothing but have a storyline.
She had the gumption to discover what friendship is.
Annabelle, because she called Naomi out.
That's true.
That's true. She fought for their friendship.
Mm-hmm. She put her foot down.
Then The Flash.
Allegra certainly had the gumption to abandon her interview and her.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I mean, that's it.
In that case, I would give it to Annabelle. Between those two options, I'm like giving it to Annabelle.
Yeah, definitely. Congratulations, Annabelle.
Woohoo! You won by default. Thank you all for joining us. We are going to be doing Turning Red in a few moments, so you can check that out on Patreon. You can find us at DCT Gumption on Twitter, ladieswgumption.tumblr.com, or ladieswgumption@gmail.com. Thank you all, and farewell.
Bye.
Bye.